Because, never mind the noisy damn bar train, that they shut down the thing, system so they can put sound walls around the Balboa Park, Excelsior neighborhoods. Never mind what it was. And, of course, it has nothing to do with racism. Of course.
Comes the story of the hurricane. The many authorities came to blame for something that he never done. Put in a prison cell for one time, he could have been the champion of the world. And he stops. One of us had better call up the cops. And so Patty calls the cops, and they arrive on the scene with their red lights flashing in a hot New Jersey night. Meanwhile, far away in another part of town, contender for the middleweight crown had no idea what kind of shit was about to go down when the cops pull him over to the side of the road, just like the time before and time before that. In Patterson, that's just the way things go. If you're black, you might as well not show up on the street unless you wanna drive ahead. Remember the murder that you happened in a bar. Remember you said you saw the getaway car. How'd you like to play ball with the law? Think it might have been that fighter running that night. Don't forget that you are white. Arthur Dexter Bradley said, I'm really not sure. Said a poor boy like you could use that break. We got you for the motel job and we're talking to your friend Bello. You don't want to have to go back to jail, be a nice fellow. You'll be doing society a favor. That son of a bitch is brave and getting braver. We want to put his ass in the stir. We want to pin this triple murder on him. He ain't no gentleman jail. Drunkards from the slums. To the white folks, he was just a revolutionary bomb. To the black folks, he was just a crazy nigger. No one doubted that he pulled the trigger. Though they could not produce the gun, the DA said he was the one who did the deed, and they all went cheery and crazy. Coats and their ties, I'm free to drink martinis and watch the sunrise, while Ruben sits like Buddha in a 10-foot cell, an innocent man in a living hell. Yes, that's the story of the hurricane, but it won't be over till they clear his name, give him back the time he's done,
yeah, DJ. Thank you, Bob. Hurricane, let me think. Let's catch up to the 27th of September. 99 film. Hurricane is a 1999 American biographical sports drama directed by Denzel Washington, convicted. But punchline, come on, film received positive reviews, film's also the latest motion. Come on, Wikipedia, what happened to Hurricane? Anyway. There is Kevin Cooper on death row and California. So
one thing you could consider adding is if we kill the ones we catch, the gang gets away. And so the death penalty is intrinsically the destruction of evidence. Most murders are the result of conspiracy. And so you're silencing, you're destroying the evidence, silencing the witness to the very crime that you're pretending to. So it is a crime in furtherance of what it pretends to pose. That's the logical reason. On the philosophical side, if we beat them at their own game, they have us playing their own, they have us playing their game. And that's what I have to keep in mind when I would say, well, let's get George H.W. Bush front and center on death row, and let's put W and Cheney and get these guys, you know, who really deserve it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right, but the counter to that is that they would have us playing their game. And on an inner side, if we're using death as a punishment, it's likely to be. So it's like a setup on a just a personal philosophical level.
The audio from this UC basement tape is so crummy, but let me back it up to the beginning again, and then we'll cruise through and just maybe repeating the parts that, like, Gerald is there, and he told me about the International Socialist Organization's meeting, but if the fate of Kevin Cooper's hands are in a one-hour meeting in a UC basement, heaven help him and us all. Okay. 54 barrels getting your little Wayback Machine to the International Socialist Organization's Free Kevin Cooper agenda item, and Proposition 62 and 66, because in November, we people of California are going to be voting, if we so choose, on whether to shut down the death row machinery. Now, because you're appealing to greed heads, you know, I'm the guy from MASH, right? You know, famous rich actor is going to run around taxpayers and say, look at all the money we'll save if we, you know, take away your post-conviction relief. And that's what both of those propositions do, but it also shuts down death row. Gerald is saying, listen, we don't got time to play with lives. If they're alive, we can work on it. If they're not, we can't. So that's coming up in November, along with Jill Stein, which, yes. Because, oh, I think this must be her.
Oh, let me just comment that Hillary Clinton knows what she's talking about when she refers to the injustices and the racial biases in our criminal justice system. Indeed, it was Bill Clinton's omnibus crime bill of the 1990s, which Hillary supported, that opened the floodgates to mass incarceration and to this assault by police and the criminal injustice system on communities of color. So, indeed, that bill that she herself promoted, saying how we needed to, quote, bring them to heel, referring to African-American communities and youth. That indeed does need to be put behind us. When Donald Trump talks about law and order, the place where law and order is most needed in our society, the place of greatest lawlessness and crime, is actually Wall Street. In fact, all the cops on the beat were laid off prior to the Wall Street crash in the years leading up to it. That is, from the Department of Justice, the FBI investigators, the security and exchange watchdogs had all been laid off. So we call for actually bringing back the cops on the beat. Wall Street does not regulate itself. It needs people on Wall Street, watching Wall Street, so we can, in fact, catch the crooks before they crash the economy again. Stop and frisk was indeed unconstitutional and was indeed a flagrant case of racial profiling. It's also true that it was not effective. In fact, crime rates were dropping in cities all over the country while they were also dropping in New York. So to attribute that to stop and frisk, which was not causing the reduction around the country, is just wrong thinking. And then let me say also, regarding policing, we need to end the broken windows policing, which is confrontational, aggressive policing that results in the kinds of tragedies we saw last week, particularly with Keith Scott, who in fact was just sitting in his car reading a book. It's disputed that he had a gun, as the police claimed, but in fact it is legal to have a gun and to carry a gun openly in North Carolina. So this is really a classic study of the violence, the inherent violence of this broken windows policing. Police need to be trained in de-escalation techniques. We need to be demilitarizing our police and changing the hiring practices so that police actually look like the community that they should be a part of.
Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein joining Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump in Democracy Now! Special Expanding the Debate.
But I'll spare you the nauseating spectacle of evil's Trump card, although I do want to get to subsequent things, but they shall be discussing arming both sides in every war. Was the first ever U.S. strike against Syrian government forces an intentional hit by the Pentagon to block military cooperation with Russia? This is readersreportthenews.org. Another U.S.-Russian-Syria ceasefire deal has been blown up, but let me get the other one here, the Saker.
latest development in Syria are not, I believe, the result of some deliberate plan of the USA to help their moderate terrorist allies on the ground, but they are the symptom of something even worse, the complete loss of control of the USA over the situation in Syria and possibly elsewhere. Let me just restate what just happened. First, after days and days of intensive negotiations, Secretary Kerry and Foreign Minister Lavrov finally reached a deal on a ceasefire in Syria, which had the potential to at least freeze the situation on the ground until the presidential election in the U.S. and a change in administration. This is now the single most important event in the near future. Therefore, no plans of any kind can extend beyond that date. Then the USAF, along with a few others, bombed a Syrian army unit, which was not on the move or engaged in intense operations, which was simply holding a key sector of the front. The U.S. strike was followed by a massive offensive of the, quote, moderate terrorists, unquote, which was barely contained by the Syrian military and the Russian aerospace forces. Needless to say, following such a brazen provocation, the ceasefire was dead. The Russians expressed their total disgust and outrage at this attack and openly began saying that the Americans were, quote, what that word means is literally not agreement capable or unable to make and then abide by an agreement. While polite, the expression is also extremely strong, as it implies not so much a deliberate deception as a lack of the very ability to make a deal and abide by it. For example, the Russians have often said that the Kiev regime is, quote, not agreement capable, unquote. And that makes sense considering that the Nazi-occupied Ukraine is essentially a failed state. But to say that a nuclear world superpower is a not agreement capable is a terrible and extreme diagnostic. It basically means that the Americans have gone crazy and lost the very ability to make any kind of deal. Again, a government which breaks its promises or tries to deceive, but who at least in theory remains capable of sticking to an agreement, would not be described as not agreement capable, unquote. That expression is only used to describe an entity which does not even have the skill set needed to negotiate and stick to an agreement in its political toolkit. This is an absolutely devastating diagnostic. Next came the pathetic and absolutely unprofessional scene of U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power simply walking out of a UNSC meeting where the Russians' representative was speaking. Again, the Russians were simply blown away, not by the infantile attempt at offending, but at the total lack of diplomatic professionalism shown the Powers. From a Russian point of view, for one superpower to simply walk out at the very moment the other superpower is making a crucial statement is simply irresponsible. And again, the sign that their American counterparts have totally, quote, lost it, unquote. Finally, there came the crowning moment, the attack of the humanitarian convoy in Syria, which the USA blamed, of course, on Russia. The Russians, again, could barely believe their own eyes. First, this was such a blatant and, frankly, kindergarten-level attempt to show that the Russians make mistakes too, unquote, and that, quote, the Russians killed the ceasefire, unquote. Second, there was this amazing statement of the Americans who said that only two air forces which could have done that, either the Russians or the Syrians. How the Americans hope to get away with this in an airspace thoroughly controlled by Russian radars is beyond me. Somehow the Americans forgot to mention that their own Air Force was also present in the region, along with the air forces of many U.S. allies. Most importantly, they forgot to mention that that night, armed U.S. Predator drones were flying right over that convoy. What happened in Syria is painfully obvious. The Pentagon sabotaged the deal made between Kerry and Lavrov, and when the Pentagon was accused of being responsible, it mounted a rather crude false flag attack and tried to blame it on the Russians. All this simply goes to show the Obama administration is in a state of confused agony. And I won't be able to get through all of this. So back to the
getting started. Thank you for being here. Welcome to the weekly meeting of the Berkeley branch of the International Socialist Organization. Today's meeting is about organizing to save Kevin Cooper. So we're going to have a speaker for about 25 minutes, and then we'll open it up to discussion. Yeah, do you
want to get over? All right, so I'm Cameron Sturman, and is there who here is not a member of the ISO? So there's two people who are not members, okay. So I really geared this. Can we roll our table down that way? Because I feel like
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I feel like the Titanic is tilted, and we split to one side, and the most stayed over here. So I really kind of geared this for what I thought would be an audience that was a little maybe more undecided, a little more not already part of the organization. So I'm not going to just speak to you two, but because I think what we're going to talk about actually has relevance for members of the group as well. So I wanted to get started by first of all saying, why now? Why have this conversation now? And then why are we having this conversation? The first part is that Prop 62 gets on the California ballot, and that is a brick wall in which everything that has to do with anybody's case down the road, including Kevin, is racing towards that wall. It's going to be very important, like how we think about that. I talked with our district organizer and tried to find out if our district or the state of California ISO chapters have taken a position yet on the proposition. The answer that I got back was it doesn't look like we have. So I think this is also an open debate. It's a good time for us to form our kind of approach to this as well. So just to get it out of the way, Prop 66 is a total no-brainer. Everybody, if you're not registered to vote, you should register, and you should vote no on 66. That's the one that's endorsed by like every prosecutor and sheriff in the state, and is basically designed to speed up the execution process by mandating appellate attorney assignments, and then also really limiting the number of appeals and the routes to appeal that are available. It would be similar to saying, like, who here has a driver's license? I thought about this, I don't know if it's voice or driver's license. Who has a driver's license, and anybody else who has a driver's license? Now, I'm presuming that all of you feel like you'd be a little bit scared with your driver's license, so then we said, you are going to drive this 18-wheeler, triple-picky truck from here to, like, Nebraska. Because you have a driver's license, right? So that means you can operate a motor vehicle, right? Because part of what Prop 66 would do is say any attorney who accepts any pro bono work or does any work on any kind of could be put into a pool and they would be assigned to murder and capital murder cases. So any time they're hearing through the entirety of Raymond's trial, he was doing coke and embezzling from his other clients to pay for the cocaine. When that was raised as like a possible impeachment of his ability to actually represent his full focus on Raymond's case, who's fighting for his life, they were saying that that's not over. But that's what people think more of that. Interesting. And that's what I'm probably going to spend more time on, and we'll talk about Kevin's case and use that Kevin's case as a prism to look at 62 and vice versa at Kevin's case through 62. 62 converts with zero as the death penalty and changes to life without the possibility of parole in California. That's the main thing. It does other things. It mandates work. It mandates restitution. But the main thing that 62 does is it does away with the death penalty and it replaces it with life without possibility. All right, so why? Those are the two things that I think are why, the motive force behind why look at this issue now, why Kevin's case is so important. So why us, or even why me? I remember 20 years ago being on the Cal campus when we decided as the ISO to support the formation of the campaign to end the death penalty in California. It's a great idea. The reason we did it was because we saw a huge amount of racism in the criminal justice system, and we thought, where is a place that we can help to expose this racism and actually make a difference inside this massive incarceration movement that's happening? And the campaign to end the death penalty was something that was going on, and so we decided to get involved in it, and that's us. The very first case I worked on was 1996. William Bonin. Is anybody here from? Did anybody here grow up in California? From Southern California at all? Freeway murders in the late 70s. This guy, undoubtedly, William Bonin did rape and murder at least 14 young boys and men, and brutally so, and then left their bodies on the freeway. Happened over a couple of years, and that's the first case that we worked on here in California. And I, in some ways, I think it's instructive because it helped us immediately clarify how are we going to approach this.
And since most murders are the result of conspiracy, as I said, they are destroying the evidence of everybody that he's working with. So there are networks of these creeps. The Franklin scandal goes to the heart of it. George H.W. Bush is at the heart of that. And Gary Cardone was the state investigator who was murdered in the same fashion as Wellstone, Carnahan, the victims of the roving felons that I had mentioned, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, both Bushes, of course. So let me just take this moment to jump to the world crisis, and I backed Webster up a little so he could talk about this rift between the Pentagon and the drone bombers Kerry's Lavrov's Russian deal. So the ceasefire with the Russians has been deliberately broken by a mutinous, treasonous Pentagon.
There is a resistance movement in the town. Their slogan is, U.S.-led airstrikes have killed 12 leaders of the Islamic State in Mosul. This group, but also sharply escalate tensions between Turkey and the United States because of Erdogan's obsession. So we'll get to some more details about the U.S. plan to arm these gallant Kurdish fighters in just a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back. Crisis Radio. And remember, AmericanSystem.tv, AmericanSystem.tv, and then you can keep up day by day instead of just once a week. And it's the cost of a Frappuccino or something. So Obama has told the National Security Council staff to prepare a plan, and I think the plan exists, to directly arm Syrian Kurdish fighters, YPG, and do it directly, not through the Syrian Democratic Forces, not through this mixed group of Arab and Kurdish fighters, but directly. And the goal is, Raqqa is an Arab at the American Enterprise Institute, and then we got Donald Kagan at Brookings, but Kim Kagan and the Institute for the Study of War. This is not reassuring, not reassuring. I'm sorry, not good. So that's Votel, right? And is that really the guy you want commanding this? Can't we get somebody a little bit more energetic, right? Is this guy a McClellan? I don't know. But it doesn't look good. So
now, Tarpley is not DJ Mouse, founding member of Bolsheviks Anonymous. We realize only by appealing to a power higher than ourselves can we overcome our disability and be happy hippies, and happy hippies don't kill people. Now, Jill Stein is saying, look, we're already arming all sides, in all wars here, and well, of course. I mean, look at, the worst example, Chibok kidnapping. When Nigeria voted disenfranchised Palestinians against what they would have done without Kerry calling Good Luck Jonathan, obviously what was going on is that we got the goods, the U.S. has the goods on Nigeria to force it into our colonial plans. So we have captured this African, the largest population, I believe, in Africa, run by our puppet Good Luck Jonathan at that time, to get Nigeria to vote against Palestine and the colonial occupation that Napoleon conceived of. So here we got bankers arming Napoleon and the British, and after Napoleon lost, the banker starts selling British consuls openly, so everybody thinks that Napoleon won, and if your banker's puppet has won, then you're going to sell all your British and go buy francs or whatever, right? So they swooped up the British Central Bank 20-to-1 profit on that ton of gold from a Holocaust on Turtle Island, because remember that rotten thing in Denmark isn't just Carmi Gion, where he fled after Rabin assassination, head of the Shin Bet, when Eagle Amir's roommate told his army commander what was going down. It was also Denmark, the, well, I forget, but...
Special, and we'll continue with it in a minute.
But we're going to skip Eagle's card. Soldier of the... Yes.
It's important, excuse me, that Hillary Clinton point out Donald Trump's record of flagrant, blatant racism. It's also important, I think, to point out the record of Hillary Clinton's actions that have also been hurtful, particularly to the African American and Latino communities. In addition to the omnibus crime bill that opened the floodgates to mass incarceration and massively disproportionate locking up of African Americans, particularly young men, in addition to that, Secretary Clinton, prior to being secretary, of course, supported the destruction of aid to families with dependent children and the replacement of this basic social safety net with a new program, so-called TAMF, Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, that locked out a large proportion of the families that needed assistance, throwing an additional 1 million plus children and their families into poverty. And that problem persists to this day.
Okay, hold that thought, Jill. I'm just going to jump to another safety net. Now, I'm probably just going to post in the comments to this day's Mouse Report, September 27, 2016, the full meeting, because Gerald goes on to talk about Mumia's case. And Williams versus State of Pennsylvania is a case that says you cannot use the prosecutor in the appeal board, because that, of course, is what they did. And so this is happening all over the place. Surely Oakland's many corrupt murders, getaway driving by the county and state and federal authorities, and all these black men shot in the back and left 4 hours just to make a point. Alan Bluford, Gary King, the complete immunity is the criminality, not only around 9/11 with the MSM, you could hear it on that day, but in each of these shootings you have the state and federal and okay, within the county, you got the DA along with the police department. So their own internal affairs guy, in the case of Oakland, kicked Jerry Amaro to death, I believe. Paulson was his name. And so he's going to green light every other one, or they'll put him first in, you know, front and center on death row, like I mentioned, Bush, Cheney. You know, our impulse is this to do. But if we beat them at their own game, they got us playing their game. And all that.
Secretary Clinton also has a track record for suppressing the minimum wage. This was in the African American country of Haiti, where Secretary Clinton led the charge to push down the minimum wage from an abysmal 60 cents an hour down to a mere 40 cents an hour in order to prop up the corporate profits of American corporations that were residing in Haiti. So she certainly has a track record of her own that needs to be aired. To talk about racial healing, It's important to recognize not only do we have to end violent policing, not one more violent racist killing, but we need to look at where the money of our municipal budgets are going. In Los Angeles, for example, where the police department has a particularly violent record, half of the city's budget actually goes into policing. Well, what the Black Lives Matter movement is suggesting there is that a substantial portion of that money needs to be spent on prevention. An ounce of prevention is worth a ton of cure in this case. We need programs for youth. We need quality schools. We need to end the school-to-prison pipeline and the sense of hopelessness that it creates. And in fact, we need school systems that teach to the whole student for lifetime learning, that incorporate art, music, and recreation and community engagement, not this high-stakes testing, which is used as an excuse to shut down public schools, to abuse teachers, to fire them, and to turn our public schools into a resource for the private charter industry.
Back to Lester Holt.
You mentioned ISIS, and we think of ISIS certainly as over there, but there are American citizens who have been inspired to commit acts of terror on American soil. The latest incident, of course, the bombings we just saw in New York and New Jersey, the knife attack at a mall in Minnesota, and the last year, deadly attacks in San Bernardino and Orlando. I'll ask this to both of you. Tell us specifically how you would prevent homegrown attacks, Mr. Trump.
Well, first I have to say one thing, very important. Secretary Clinton is talking about...
I promise to spare you that evil's trump card.
Add them. Or, as I've been saying
Shut up.
Fine. In front of a congressional committee, he can talk to me about stamina.
Oh, you too.
They completely bucked on the administration. No more. Where they be puns in the game. Now that time is going down.
So, we need a just tax system. Both Democrats and Republicans over the past decades have shifted the tax base from corporations and the wealthy far more onto the backs of the middle class and working people and the poor. So the things that Donald Trump is talking about, indeed, they don't work. They've been tried before. The Democrats and Republicans essentially eliminated Donald Trump is proposing to eliminate the inheritance tax after Democrats and Republicans reduced it through the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy, which then Barack Obama made permanent. So that inheritance tax needs to be restored because the inheritance tax helps us prevent the establishment of an aristocracy, which is what we now have in the United States, where 22 billionaires have the wealth among them equivalent to 50% of the American population. And this wealth is being massively accumulated and passed on, which establishes the kind of aristocracy which was not supposed to be a part of this country. So we need to put the inheritance tax back where it was before the Bush tax cuts. We need to increase the top marginal rates in the income tax. You could put them back to where they were even under Ronald Reagan, and they would be at the 55-60 percent tax level. And we should put a tax on Wall Street. Why should the wealthiest sector of the economy be the one sector which is not contributing a sales tax to our general revenue? So even putting a tiny tax on Wall Street transactions would generate hundreds of billions of dollars, which are critically needed. In addition, as I mentioned, we need a Green New Deal to actually create the jobs directly. Government-funded jobs, which create incentives, grants, and loans for small businesses, for worker cooperatives and nonprofits, and with government as an employer of last resort to ensure that we have the jobs jobs that we need to transition the economy in the time frame needed to 100% clean renewable energy by 2030, a healthy and sustainable food system, which is currently the source of many of our fossil fuel emissions, and efficient, renewably powered public transportation, also to restore our ecosystems. And finally, health care as a human right needs to be provided as a basic right for everyone through an improved Medicare for All system. It doesn't cost any more. We simply eliminate the middleman and the profiteering and put our health care dollars into real health care.
Let's go back to Lester Holt.
Thank you. the bombings and the shootings in Nice and in Paris, and even the police shootings in Dallas and Baton Rouge. These are all labeled as terrorist or lone wolf actions, and we don't really know that. I mean, that this is the media's explanation that terrorism, this global terrorism, is doing all of this.
Au contraire, Peter. We do know, in fact, the immediate announcement of the absence of conspiracy is smoking gun in the intelligence chief's hand, okay? Now, okay, like posted on the Mockingbird hour, like 10 points down the dial, that the, well, anyway, I don't want to get into that, but...
But the context of Gladio and other false flag operations historically, what do we really know about these?
We'll get back to that. But the, of course, I have all these little segue details by intelligence chiefs, the Frankenstein mayor. Remember, grafted onto the body politic of the best mayor San Francisco ever had. Now, the Jonestown Moscone Milk murders, there were electrodes in those bodies. Maybe Russell goes into that a little bit. Part of a CIA operation. Now, of course, the guns for drug biz. And Mr. Bill was Poppy Bush's Mina Coke stand attendant. Mrs. Bill is his worst half, murdering my stunt double in that genocide in Africa that is running into the tens of millions. Because remember, it was a 1990 invasion from Uganda. Yours, gringo. Gringa, that has spilled over, well, not spilled over, it's been going for the loot in the Congo, where you murdered Lumumba, Carlisle Group, Carlucci, and gang. Of course, they're all over 9/11 and stuff. But Dianne Feinstein immediately announced the absence of conspiracy, just like LBJ's Hoover, you know, hearing the sound of their bodies hitting the ground simultaneous with the announcement of the absence of conspiracy, JFK, RFK, MLK, okay, we know the routine, and Harvey Milk, the first gay supervisor, and the best mayor, George Moscone, so that they could clear the way, because this is ground zero for the drug kingpins and the guns for drugs. This is the Clintons jutting into the southwest corner of... the southwest corner of Arkansas is where Mina is, and the Clintons are guarding that little airport for Hassenfuss. Now, who sings like a canary when that 15-year-old with a stinger shoots down the terrorists dropping weapons to the death squads in Nicaragua because they voted for... now, they were trying to do what the Gusanisto, Tio Taco, Golpistas in Brazil are doing, just did, bringing down the elected Dilma Rousseff by a bunch of white men backed by banksters so they can reinstitute slavery. And as the son of a five-year-old who was killing bunnies on the way to kindergarten told me he didn't want to be brought back here, just like Stalin didn't have brothers and sisters, I have been. Hardwired to dig up around John Bouldering body, put on that uniform because his truth goes marching on. And slavery is like, blah.
You've hit the nail on the head. I mean, yeah, there's something I read in the Times. I put this in my foreword to your book, at the front page piece about the echoes in Dallas. Okay, it was about the shootings of those cops in Dallas. And it purported to be a piece about how this horrible tragedy recalls the horrible tragedy in Dallas in 1963. And there's actually a passage that says, in 1963, a lone gunman killed the president. This time, again, it was a lone gunman.
I remember seeing that, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those head-exploding moments. I mean, nobody believes any longer that a lone gunman killed J. I mean, maybe a few people believe
it. Even Congress said that there was a conspiracy. So.
Right. In 1979, even the House Select Committee on Assassination came up with this lukewarm admission that there was a second gunman. I mean, they said it was the mafia, but nevertheless, even they, back then, that long ago, exploded the notion that a lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald, did this deed. And then there's been tons and tons of meticulous, unassailable research, completely devastating this ridiculous notion that Lee Harvey Oswald was the gunman that day. And yet the New York Times makes that claim. And why? As you say, they make that claim to bolster a claim that a lone gunman was responsible for this crime. And it's just one of many, the sudden recent epidemic of grotesque terrorist attacks carried out by these mysterious individuals. I mean, where do they all come from, right? If indeed what happened in 1963, officially what happened, is a complete fantasy, then I think we're probably on solid ground to raise some rational questions about this recent rash of similar crimes, as you say.
That's what the free press ought to be doing, is asking these kinds of questions and following them up. But, you know, these have been happening in succession and with such frequency this past year or so, a couple years, they seem to get sent down the memory hole. You have a series called The Forbidden Bookshelf, and I know you've been on this program talking about it before, but these historical issues that get thrown down the memory hole, these are things that you focus on in that series.
Oh, our purpose there is to make important works now out of print available again. Unfortunately, we can only do it as e-books, but we bring them out again with new introductions, and these are books that deal with a broad range of the kinds of subjects you're referring to, the things that we need to remember, we need to know. Because if we live in a state of collective amnesia, either we don't know anything about the past or we've forgotten it all, we are supremely vulnerable to any kind of manipulation by the state. We are incapable of functioning as the citizens of democracy if we don't know the past. Along these lines, I want to plug a book that we did not publish or republish, but it is about Operation Gladio. It came out in 2015. It was almost universally ignored, despite or because of its excellence as a work of sort of journalistic scholarship. It's called Operation Gladio by Paul Williams, who used to be a neocon and a consultant to the FBI, a frequent guest on Fox News because he would talk about the threat of Islamic terrorism, until he began to notice that there is actually significant evidence that much Islamic terrorism is actually funded and cultivated by the American government. He actually discovered a place called Islamburg in upstate New York, where they were training radical converts to Islam. You know, these are guys who converted to Islam in prison in this country and were being trained as crack troops, terrorist troops, under the auspices of our government. Okay, he did a piece about this for some outlet, and this led him to research the whole phenomenon, the whole story of Operation Gladio, and the strategy of tension, and the deliberate creation of terrorist incidents as a way to discredit the left.
These are false flags.
These are all false flags. Operation Gladio is one.
Sorry, but just checking, and Upfront has deleted my comment because, I mean, I posted my comment, there it was, but no, there's this red flag there with my name that you can follow the link to my other comments on the KBOA website, but I have been deleted. Okay, what did I say? I said, Pentagon perp wields box cutter myth before returning to its 9/11 peekaboo scabbard to silence the host, and the upfront hosts apparently are contractually required to endorse all inside jobs like the air defense stand down before two drone strikes and triple demolitions. Never mind. Oh, I've already lost my place. Well, I'll skip ahead of where we had been.
Terrorists are now more virulent, strident, and even hysterical than ever. That you have the president of France actually pushing legislation to make conspiracy theory illegal. You have David Cameron, the former British prime minister, claiming publicly that conspiracy theory is as dangerous as ISIS.
Mark Crispin Miller, in the United States under Obama, we had Cass Sunstein's cognitive infiltration.
Right. An idea to use trolls to disrupt civilized debate about 9/11 online. And the Clinton campaign is also using trolls. I noticed that the Times did a big piece about some poor woman, a journalist in Finland, who was attacked by Russian trolls, you know, because she was critical of Russian foreign policy. Okay, that's deplorable. I don't notice that the Times has talked about Cass Sunstein's plan. I don't notice that the Times has reported anything about the Clinton team's similar plan. You know, it's just more of the same kind of ministry of truth.
And these are Ivy League scholars promoting this kind of censorship.
Except the best and the brightest.
Yeah, that's quite disturbing. And it, again, it's just another example, however, of how the establishment, the plutocratic power elites and so forth, they really do try to dress up whether it's government or the benevolent free market or our higher educational institutions. They certainly dress them up in one regard, that they are doing things that we learn about or attribute to them. Yet, if you actually have a free press and actually have intrepid journalists going to the dark places to shine lights, we find out that these are illusions in many ways.
Exactly. We find it out. I want to return to a point that Peter made about how critics will immediately cry foul when you invoke the Nazis as a kind of antecedent to what we have today. I mean, clearly, the Nazis dealt with journalists far more brutally than our system deals with them. Or Sophie Scholl and her brother, you know, were beheaded for handing out pamphlets critical of the Nazis. That was the White Rose movement. And there were actual reporters who were sent to Dachau for their reporting. All right, that kind of thing doesn't happen, although
you're not mentioning Gary Webb came back from the dead to shoot himself the second time in the head, and I had his, I talked to him, I had his signature on Dark Alliance. Of course, Chauncey Bailey, of course, pulling the covers on local OPD's $250,000 pig story, and I mean, there's like $250,000 pigs, and I have to update the story too, but then there was Michael Hastings' spectacular thermite explosion. Military said, we're going to get you. They used military devices to do it. So, well, nanothermite and stuff, but...
I want to say parenthetically that we have had many journalists who've died mysteriously, from Dorothy Kilgallen back in the 60s up through Michael Hastings and so on. So that kind of thing is no means unheard of here, because there's quite a long list of journalists who've perished under suspicious circumstances. But by and large, the way our system deals with journalists is to threaten them with a kind of professional excommunication through the use of conspiracy theory as a stigma, you know?
Chilling effects and self-censorship.
Exactly. So any journalist who wants to keep his job and make those mortgage payments and keep his kid in private school is just going to instinctively shy away from talking about the issues that we're talking about today.
Oh, yeah. And then, so I said, wielding the box cutter myth before returning to its 9/11 peekaboo scabbard, the Pentagon perp silences the upfront hosts who apparently are contractually required to endorse all inside jobs. Take two listens to Mark Crispin Miller and Call Us in the Morning. And I posted the link to this from the KPFA website onto the KPFA website on the upfront show on Monday, yesterday. And presto, at least they watched their website. You can read all about the show, but they unposted that simple little comment. Perhaps they protest too much.
And American democracy is all the poorer for it.
Again, a fairly unfortunate series of developments, but it is also a very systemic one. We remember, if we do go back in history, and I teach history, so I'm kind of friendly with it, the bombing of Al Jazeera offices.
Right, exactly.
I mean, specific targeting of journalists, and really specifically targeting, and of course what we see here, remember the history of Gary Webb, somebody that really blew wide open the CIA and crack cocaine explosion, and his career was destroyed over it and ultimately ended his life.
Well, yeah, and who were his main tormentors? The New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Los Angeles Times. And let me add that the excellent movie, Kill the Messenger, that Michael Cuesta made about that whole story. I had Michael Cuesta come to a course I teach at NYU.
Ah, well, you will keep your job as long as you mouth that suicide crap along with the Kill the Messenger guy. He wasn't tormented, he was murdered, okay? He had a million followers, goddammit.
And he talked about Kill the Messenger and explained, told us the whole story of how the movie was not marketed, that it played in theaters for a very short time. He was deeply disappointed in the way that it was handled. It's directly comparable to what happened to Polanski's film, The Ghost Rider, which is another really first-rate treatment of CIA manipulation and so on. You know, unlike Argo, right?
Right.
These movies...
Or Zero Dark Thirty.
Zero Dark Thirty. These movies play all over the place. They get glowing reviews.
The Interview.
They get Oscar nominations. They get Oscars. These far more intelligent and honest films on the same subject get short shrift. Now, you know, nobody's putting a gun to these filmmakers' heads and blowing their brains out. That's true, as would happen in a far more brutal system, or a more overtly brutal system. But nevertheless, you know, there is more than one way to skin a cat. Whatever it takes,
Trump, we're talking
to
about.
Make sure people don't know what's going on.
Well, and the CIA is actually helping script some of these films.
No kidding. Right.
Yeah, I mean, not literally. I don't even, again, another thing I'm not saying hyperbolically.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, and the Department of so-called Defense, you know, the Pentagon also helps filmmakers with projects that they approve of, you know, which is actually a violation of the First Amendment, but it is routine. It's the way they function. They will not help you if they don't like the script. But if they do like the script, they'll give you all kinds of military hardware and expert advice and so on.
To Censor 2017 really goes down a lot into the memory hole and makes a real case that our free press has failed in regard of the notion of keeping the public informed. But on the other note, it hasn't failed given that it seems to be designed as a propaganda arm of the state and multinational corporations as a means of controlling public discourse and action.
And in a way, it's important to add, in a way that really puts us all at risk, serious risk, risk of war, risk of some kind of fascism, overt or implicit, puts us at risk in terms of our health, our children's health. You know, to engage in vehement disinformation about something as important as vaccines, that's like a crime against humanity. That's not just a peccadillo. That's not just a failing. That's evil. So thank God for the internet. Thank God for young people who are immersed in it, and not just in a way get distracted by pornography and Snapchat and stuff like that, but as a source of really crucial information that the press is not giving us.
Hello. Oh, that's all right. Okay. Never mind.
Sure, control is not convinced, but the computer has the evidence.
Shining Toy Guns. Because... Where was I? Oh, yes. Talking about being a UFO, because maybe I should follow Syrian Girls' Why You Just Kill Us question, playing Shiny Toy Guns, Major Tom. Well, actually, I had to start with that, because there's no segue back. We cannot get there from No Happy Songs after Syrian Girl.
Syrian soldiers have been attacked by U.S. airstrikes, a fact that has allowed ISIS to advance in the Syrian city of Deir ez-Zor. 72 soldiers were killed and 100 injured when a Syrian army base was struck in Thirdra Mountain in Deir ez-Zor, where they were conducting battles against ISIS. This is a huge escalation, which adds further proof that the U.S. State Department has been backing the terrorists all along.
Yeah, and then I have to go back to my Back to the Tracks question. Because just 10 points down the dial, I just heard a little sampling of Paying the Price for Peace with Charlie Lidke and Duncan Murphy. And we don't have Duncan, but Charlie is talking about a fast to the death. So that sounds like a good segue to the Guide to the End of the World. And the hopeful spiritual side of my Guide to the End of the World, and maybe I should sample Ghost Whisperer's episode with the airline passenger, says we have to escort our former Contra terrorists to the hospital, protecting them from those we just paid them to kill, like our nurse Dorothy did in Nicaragua to get the bullet out of his head. And then he goes back and says to his death squad, you can't kill her, she's the only one taking care of our families. Now, Nurse Dorothy got knocked down by the cops at the tracks, trying to hold a flashlight on me while they circled me at night, bending my fingers over backwards. Everything's fine in hindsight. About the end of the world, the fifth world in Mesoamerican calendar speak is Olin earthquake, which ended in 1987. And that's what I'm going to do. Because, you know, they, so we got to teach CPR here. Airway, breathing, circulation, ABC. Blow in their mouth, squeeze their nose shut. Okay, my Baha'i teacher a century ago performed it before it was invented on the Lakota chief's son, who gave him he had pneumonia, okay? He saved his life. And, it was a dream about the colorful medicine bag that he writes about in Where's the Rainbow, watching all the tribes walk up into the sky, forming a rainbow with all their colors. But he was the one on the Siskiyou stage who told me what the 9 spikes on the Mexican calendar meant. Now, there's a similar 9 calendar, 52 years, the lifetime of Montezuma's ancestor. So silver, gifts of silver and gold mirrors were presented to the barbarians off the coast, to the barbarians ruling this Italy-sized empire. Nawa, I mean, speaks with authority. I don't know. I meet and love Nawa people. Zapata said his speech in Nawa, you know, his war against the Cristianos. But I felt at home in Mayalan, too. And after 2 millennia, Maya is Maya. Latin is broken into 5 indecipherable dialects. But what did I say last week?
Course I don't, which is the point of today's show.
I don't have a rocket launcher at this point.
Well, yeah. The guy to the end of the world, because...
Because if Hassenfuss had been killed, like Cohen suggests, with a locker launcher, the 15-year-old had the Stinger shoot down the Contra supplier, he would sing like a canary and point to Luis Posada Carriles and Felix Rodriguez, Max Gomez, and Ramon Medina as he knew them, but of course, pictures don't lie. Just like Hunt and Sturgis at Dealey Plaza, the photo overlays in the Watergate hearings, because your Gusano plumber goons are so stupid they have to write H. Hunt W. House, and the press is so prostituted, you know, pathetic lapdogs that, you know, you don't call the W. House and ask for Mr. Hunt, which is what the military okayed Bernstein and all did. Woodward, I think, was the military press guy or something. That pathetic W book, but back to last week. We were supposed to escort our Contras instead of this phony war against them to the hospital because they got this sickness. Now, the bullet is actually the Western mind fork of this third-party forgiveness and associated crimes. Well, that's actually the Christian ones, but there's also this aspect of terror, and I never got around to sampling the Ghost Whisperer, but my point was that okay, you're terrorized by death, and it's an existential problem for a mortal to be terrorized by the inevitable. So they can play you with this until you come to terms with it. And I made it past my insanity years, you know, driving 100 miles an hour, jumping out of airplanes, taking everything that gets me to look down into the open darkness of when your jaw drops, you know, seeing ghosts on the street of dead, when you break the rules to stay at night, and that they work on altering your states in many different ways, but eventually it's good to be alive, and it's all fun in hindsight. And there's various forms. There's thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, which does not address women, because it already would say husband. So it's like this wife beater, which is to say salafists and all. And I went to the Third Avenue Baptist Church here, Oaktown. It was not a coincidence that my friend was the only black person there, because they were preaching, it says, obey your master servants. Of course, they mean slaves. Solomon's principality is what you are paying for, gringo. DIA 2012 report rubs our nose in it. Yeah.
Welcome back to 5300 Port Chicago Highway Murder Mystery. Where in this country is there a military target where an adversary could use a nuclear weapon, killing everyone for a square mile without committing a war crime by murdering innocent civilians? I asked Commander Richard, the lion-hearted Abe would call him, Owens. And standing on the tracks of the weapons station that had shipped the mass destruction to Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Korea, Vietnam, Central America, and later Iraq and Afghanistan, he said, no. No, there's nowhere in the world where they could be used, unquote. A half a dozen years before the International Court of Justice decision on the illegality of radioactive mass murder of any kind, this should have been the end of the story. We had been planning a going-away party for ourselves at the tracks, but that was before Clinton's betrayals and the return to power of the very people whose crimes drove us here, so it should come as no surprise if it was business as usual on Hiroshima Day. Where the nukes came from. The first since our Pentagon supposedly fell asleep to let two drone-piloted plane crashes bring down three New York skyscrapers. Anyway, the record should speak for itself.